It's the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, presented by State Farm.
Yeah, it is, but it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a teaching tutorial Thursday, which means we will have my main man, the professor, Greg Cosell, NFL Films extraordinaire. Also going to play you an interview that I had with Mike Pettine today on SiriusXM NFL Radio. He was just so honest, and the end of it especially, when he talks about getting his first win and what that meant for him. I really wanted you guys to be able to hear that. Booger McFarland is the other voice you'll hear on that one. We are presented by State Farm. State Farm. RossTucker.com is the hub for this podcast, for the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast, for the Even Money podcast, both of which came out with new episodes today. Hopefully you're already subscribing, downloading to all of those. And hopefully you guys are re-energized for this contest to spread the word so everybody can get some autographed stuff, everybody that wants something. Anyway, make sure you get on the NFL Stories email list. I'm going to send Brian another one to send out probably today. It's a doozy from my time in Buffalo, to say the least. All you need to do is put your email address in there at rostucker.com. By the way, got a lot of feedback on what I said yesterday about Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson. I'd say about 80% overwhelmingly positive. There were definitely some people that didn't care for some of the things I said. I guess the one thing I would say about that is I encourage dialogue. I encourage feedback, and I don't ever expect everyone to agree with me. I think the problem I have is when it's pretty clear, and you can check out my mentions on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. When it's pretty clear that you hear what you want to hear, or that you twist my words, I think that's what I have a problem with. I think there's a great place for debate and dialogue, but when you really just hear what you want to hear and you're looking to criticize, even though that's not what I said, I think that's part of the problem that we have right now with what I like to call the media and really the social media mob that exists. But anyway, I encourage the dialogue either way. Just please, as much as you can, make sure that you're critiquing or disagreeing with what I was actually saying and not what you wanted to hear. Let's get into the big show.
The big show.
Well, he comes on every Thursday because he's the professor. He watches every play of every game. That's why we love him. He always says some interesting things, some things that are borderline controversial, but he's just going based on what he sees. We always touch a lot on the Thursday night game. He is my main man, Greg Cosell. Greg, I always love to start with the Thursday night game since that's at the forefront of our minds. I guess let's start with the 0-2 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'd be hard-pressed, Greg, to find a more disappointing team starting off 0-2 at home,
yeah,
losing to two backup quarterbacks. When you look at them offensively, Greg, what do you see right now?
Well, I see a passing game that's not very good right now. I think McCown is not playing with a whole lot of discipline. I think this past week they scaled back significantly and they tried to run the ball. There were a lot of two-back sets. They had some success with it. I think they tried to play a very balanced offense, and that's fine. If your defense can hold up, and they scored 17, which oftentimes when you play a balanced sort of vanilla offense, that's what you get. They just happened to give up 19 and lose at the end. But it was a little interesting to watch that because they have a so-called veteran quarterback who's been in the league a long time. So it just made me wonder why the offense, to me, looked very scaled back and very run-based with a lot of two-back sets, a lot of straight eye. That it's a question that I don't know the answer to because I'm not there, but that's the way they played.
Right, so I guess there's a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, could you say that maybe they did that because of the success that the Vikings had on the ground against the Rams the week before?
That's sure. It's very, very possible. The Rams played pretty well against the run a couple of times. A couple of the longer rainy runs came clearly on Ram mistakes, and then taking nothing away from Rainey, but they were just clear gap mistakes that allowed a couple of the longer runs. But for the most part, even if you look at the numbers, Rainey, I think, had 22 for 143. When you watch the tape, Ross, you didn't come away thinking, wow, they're just gouging them in the run game. That wasn't what the tape showed, even though the numbers might suggest, if you're just looking at a stat sheet, that they ran the ball really well.
Greg, as you and I know, I think everybody always wants to peg it on one thing. It's usually a combination of several things. I'm curious, when you look at this Bucs offense, you mentioned McCown not necessarily playing his best. How much do you put on McCown? How much do you think is the offensive line struggling? And what do you think so far of Jeff Tedford? I know in week one he wasn't the one calling the plays, but to my knowledge, this is the first time he's been a play caller in the NFL, which is a little different than college football.
Yeah, and look, we talked last year a lot about Mike Glennon, and last year I felt that Mike Glennon, based on film, was the best rookie quarterback. And I'm not there again every day, but they signed McCown and they anointed him the starter. I could easily make an argument, and this will sound bold and controversial, but to me it's not, Ross, because all I'm doing is sitting here looking at tape. I could make an argument that they're starting their second-best quarterback right now. And, you know, they obviously don't feel that way. Reasonable people have differing views on a number of things. But, you know, I thought based on last season that Mike Glennon was on his way to being a very solid NFL starter. McCown had five good games last year in a really good offensive system with a really good offensive coach in Mark Trestman. And prior to that, he'd been a real solid, nice NFL backup. And this takes nothing away from McCown. That's what he's been, correct? Wasn't that what he was?
He was, yeah. I mean, he didn't exactly get ideal opportunities if you look at where he started and who he was playing with.
No question.
But, yeah.
But essentially, that's what he's been. So, you know, I think that this was a game, and I don't know what Jeff Tedford's going to do as he goes forward. That I can't answer. But I think this was a game where they probably felt they could play pretty close to the vest. They were playing a backup quarterback, and I think they probably felt they could sneak out, get their season on track, winning, you know, a Lovie Smith kind of game, you know, winning a 2017 game. And instead they lost 1917, which, as you know, Ross, when you play those kinds of games, that can happen to you. You know, if they had won 1917, we'd be saying, oh, the Bucs are back on track. You know, they look like their season might be heading in the right direction. But when you lose those games, when they essentially play out the same way, but you happen to lose, then all of a sudden, you know, things are falling apart.
Is it fair to say that McCown's playing a decent amount worse than he was last year for Chicago? I mean, I also look at it, Greg, and I didn't study the tape like you did, but I mean, he only had five incompletions in the entire game.
I mean, is McCown a poor player? By no means. I mean, he threw a bad interception in the red zone, which theoretically is the reason you're playing him, not to make those kinds of mistakes. It was a terrible decision in the red zone. You're counting on a veteran quarterback not to make those kinds of mistakes. But he made it. So, no, but did he play poorly overall? Absolutely not. That wasn't really my point. But I think that this game was played to minimize the McCown's impact as a passer. Now, that may not be a function of McCown. That may be a team thing that they wanted to play and try to, you know, win a game where their defense could stay settled. They were missing a number of defenders. So it's an overall team concept when you build an offense as well. So that's not solely on Josh McCown.
Greg, what about the other team that's in tonight's game, the Atlanta Falcons? Obviously, they had a huge offensive performance week one, not so much week two. But I want to start with the defense, specifically, you know, that front seven. They paid a lot of money to bring in Tyson Jackson and Paul Soliai, in large part to try to stop the run. They were not able to do that against the Bengals. Is it on those guys? Are they not performing the way they've been paid? Or do you think it's more schematic or maybe the second level with the linebackers? What are you seeing, or what did you specifically see from the Falcons' run defense on Sunday against the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think, quite frankly, that they have great players. I mean, the money's irrelevant to me. I'm just telling you what the film shows. I mean, you know, I don't think the players are great. They're still starting two free agent linebackers in their 3-4 now, Werlow and Bartu. Bartu's getting fewer snaps. They're starting to work in the rookie Prince Shimbo from Notre Dame, so that tells you ultimately how they feel about Bartu, that they're looking to get another player in his spot. You know, and I think Werlow is you know, he's a nice story as a free agent, but I think ultimately you'd like an upgrade at that position. So in their run defense, they're playing two guys at inside linebacker that probably need to be upgraded. So Solei makes some nice plays. I'm not sure about Tyson Jackson as a true run defender on a consistent basis. So I think Babineau is their best defensive lineman. He's probably better suited to be a one-gap player than a two-gap player. So, I think there's a personnel issue.
How about offensively? They went from week one looking fantastic to week two against Cincinnati doing very little. I think obviously the Bengals deserve a lot of credit, but what was slowing down the Falcons last week, and how much of an issue is their offensive line?
It's a big issue, and I think they played a Bengals defense that is incredibly multiple with fronts, coverages, pressures. I don't think they held up well schematically or individually, and that made it very difficult. They don't really have a viable run game at this point. So I think that my guess is that's not going to happen tonight. You know, the Bucs have played only nickel defense, no snaps of dime, and if Roddy White is able to go, I think you're going to see four wide receivers, which they've done 27 snaps in two games, the Falcons, and I think you're going to see four wide receivers, they'll put it on Matt Ryan to set the protections and get the ball out of his hands, which he's more than capable of doing, and I think that's one way you'll see the Falcons attack.
Greg, let's look at some of the other games this weekend. I know always like to get into with you what you're breaking down on the NFL matchup show, Saturday mornings, 8:30 a.m. ESPN2, Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. ESPN, both times Eastern, of course. I want to start with Colin Kaepernick. We've talked about him a bunch, but they played in the Sunday night primetime game. Everybody was watching, and the second half especially was not real good. Has he made any progress, Greg, or is he regressing? I mean, you know, that first year when he took over for Alex Smith, everybody got so excited, and not only do I not think he's better than any better, I think he might be worse.
Well, it's funny because I think watching the tape, I keep reading how poorly he played. I think it's because of the result. I don't think he really played as poorly as I'm reading. People see the result, and that's what they say. But now, this comes down to a whole philosophical discussion, Ross, and we've had it before, you and I. If you believe, not you or you, just generally, that the quarterback position still is about playing from the pocket at its core, if you don't develop the pocket skills of a quarterback, then where are you going? Okay, he will always make some plays with his legs. Now, the final interception he threw, he left the pocket, probably prematurely, and when he delivered that ball, he was certain Vance McDonald was wide open. He didn't see Fuller. But if you're going to encourage movement by your quarterback, Ross, then you got to live with those plays.
Because but isn't the problem, Greg, that he's not seeing things? Or even if he, it just seems to me like he's almost telegraphing stuff. He's either telegraphing some of his throws and thinks he can get it there with his arm strength, or he's just not seeing things the way you would think he would in his third year as a starter now.
Well, some of that's a function of the fact that he's not a pure timing anticipation thrower, as most quarterbacks who are movement quarterbacks are not, because timing anticipation is an advanced quarterback skill that demands pocket repetition over and over and over and over. And again, it comes back to the larger point. If you're going to encourage your quarterback to move because he has great legs and he can make plays with his legs, then you never advance to the subtleties of the position. And there'll be games in which that's a factor, okay? This was a game in which it was a factor and they lost. If, let's say, if their defense happened to make a play in the fourth quarter, which, by the way, over the last couple of years very often was the case, no one would be talking about Colin Kaepernick, but they lost the game. So therefore, we're talking about Colin Kaepernick. You could argue he played no differently this week than he plays every week. You know, Chris Conte's interception and Kyle Fuller's first interception were phenomenal defensive plays. Phenomenal defensive plays. The last interception was a function of his movement. He moved. He couldn't see Kyle Fuller. No one would have seen Kyle Fuller. He was hiding behind two people. But when plays become random and arbitrary, that can happen. And if you're going to encourage movement, then you got to live with those plays, Ross. That can happen sometimes.
Well, and you mentioned the subtleties of playing from the pocket. I don't know that there's many people that did it better on Sunday than Phillip Rivers against the Seahawks. I mean, I saw a stat, Greg, in passes in which he got the ball out of his hands in less than 2.5 seconds, he was 17 for 19, which is 89.5%. So I guess the question everybody wants to know with the Seahawks about to play the Broncos is, did Phillip Rivers and Mike McCoy and the Chargers, did they show the blueprint for how to move the football and how to beat the Seahawks on Sunday?
No, I'm not a blueprint guy, Ross. I mean, do they? Who's there, Danny Woodhead? They don't have Danny Woodhead. And as great as Julius Thomas is, he's not Antonio Gates. They're different players. So if Denver brings Woodhead and Gates and plays and conceptually does some of those things, then yeah. But I don't believe Woodhead and Gates will be playing for Denver this week, will they?
No. They can throw the ball to Julius Thomas, and they can throw the ball to a running back, although they don't have anybody like Woodhead. You're right.
No. So now the question is, through 2 weeks without Wes Welker, Denver has been predominantly a 12-personnel offense, one back, two tight ends. Last year with Wes Welker, they were predominantly a 3-wide receiver offense, almost 75% of their snaps. What will they do this week? I personally think in Seattle, where it's tough to hear, you're better off playing with 12 personnel. They need to protect. That was a big problem in the Super Bowl. They couldn't protect. And, that'll be issue number one. Now, Rivers made a ton of throws. Rivers is very deceptive. He made a ton of throws under duress with people around him. He's never given credit for that. You know, as great as Peyton Manning is, and that's inarguable, he's not really that guy. So, there's a lot of factors. Every game is different. There's no blueprints, and every game is different.
It's interesting. What do you see? There's a big debate on how Richard Sherman played or how much they were able to take advantage of Sherman. What did you see in that regard?
Well, we did this last year in the Super Bowl matchup show. We looked at so many plays, and Richard Sherman's always been susceptible in press position to slant routes. He's always been susceptible to that because Richard Sherman is a length athleticism player. He's not a technique player. So, you can get him with when you stick outside and go inside with slants. He gave up a ton of those last year, too. They did that. Keenan Allen did that. They caught him with some motions. I mean, you got to play the game. You don't just throw go routes against Richard Sherman. He's going to win those. But you can attack Richard Sherman. You just have to play your game and do what you do. And, Green Bay chose not to do that week one, which I thought was a mistake. And I don't think that San Diego said we're going after Richard Sherman. I think they played. And if the route and the ball had to go to that receiver, that's what they did. And, I think you have to play that way.
Greg, a lot of people, I think including Kirk Cousins, are comparing Kirk Cousins to Andy Dalton. Do you see that comparison at all? And do you think Kirk Cousins can have that success in Jay Gruden's offense?
Yeah, I think physically the comparison works. I think Cousins, to be a good NFL quarterback, would have to be just like Dalton in the sense he'd have to be very good before the snap. He'd have to read coverage. He'd have to throw with timing and anticipation, which I think he can do. He has a little kind of hitch in his giddy up when he throws. Right before he throws, he takes a step backward with his back foot, so he widens his base, and that's why he really can't drive the ball the way you'd like him to. Doesn't have a weak arm, but he's not a drive thrower. But the thing you watch with Cousins, he has a very good feel for why plays are called, where the ball should go, how to manipulate the defense. He understands how to play. And I think he has a chance to be one of those quality NFL starters if there's a lot around him.
What did you see from Austin Davis for the Rams? I mean, do you think they should?
I liked him in the game. I mean, he's very limited as a passer, very limited. But he's, I tell you what, he understood that offense. He did a great job recognizing fronts and coverages. He had three what we call smoke plays where it was a called run, but because of the front and the coverage, he threw the ball. That's very big in the NFL now. And he recognized. He played with poise and composure. I liked the way he played. You know, there are certain things he won't be able to do with his arm, but I liked the way he played.
Greg, you are the man. What do you got coming up on the matchup show this weekend?
Well, we got Washington, Philly, Pittsburgh, Carolina. How about Carolina? No one talking about them, Ross. You know, 2-0. I think that might be surprising to a lot of people. San Diego, Buffalo is probably a bigger game than some might have thought entering week three. We got Tennessee, Cincinnati. We have Chicago Jets, San Francisco, Arizona, and, of course, Denver, Seattle. Not many bigger than Denver, Seattle this week.
No, there's not. Sounds good. My DVR is set, my friend.
Thank you, Ross. I appreciate that.
Man, oh, man, having Greg Cosell on is a no-brainer. Just like sending roses to your significant other on her birthday or anniversary. But I'm just telling you this. I have some experience of this. When you surprise her with roses just because, you score major points. Major points. Think of this. How often have any of you ever sent roses to your significant other, maybe even your mom, just because? You want to talk about rocking her world? All you need to do is go to 1-800-Flowers.com. They are your rose authority. They're passionate about delivering fresh, high-quality, beautiful roses every time. I already told you I sent this special, which is amazing, a limited-time offer at 1-800-Flowers, 36 stunning multicolored roses for just $36. I already sent them to my wife at work to brighten her day. She got them on Tuesday. I got a lot of compliments. Even all of her coworkers said they thanked her for having beautiful flowers in the office. So I even got a little bit of love from the coworkers. Incredible bouquet, 3 dozen beautiful roses, only $36. I've seen them. They're awesome. It's a ridiculous value. I mean, $1 a rose, you can't get that anywhere else, but it's limited time. So go to 1-800-Flowers.com from your desktop, download the mobile app, or even right on your phone. I do it. Click on the radio microphone in the upper right corner, enter football, 1-800-Flowers.com, enter football, or you can call 1-800-Flowers, mention football. It is ridiculously easy.
Tux takes.
Afternoon, Ross.
Afternoon, Bri.
So after yesterday's podcast, the Carolina Panthers put Greg Hardy on that same commissioner's exempt list. Not exactly a surprise, but what do you think?
I understand why these teams don't feel like they can have that guy out there on the field on Sunday with the charges that Greg Hardy's been convicted of and that Adrian Peterson has basically admitted to. I totally understand that part of it, that it would be a bad look for the NFL to have guys like that out there on the field on Sunday. But I can tell you right now, the trade-off as an NFL player is that you get paid a bunch of money, especially those guys, but in return, you have to risk serious injury. You have to accumulate significant wear and tear on your body, and you have to go out there and perform under a lot of pressure, under the lights, everything. These guys are now getting paid without having to do any of that. So, I mean, if it's supposed to be a punishment, it's not much of one. That's the point I would make.
Tux takes.
Arizona Cardinals running back Jonathan Dwyer wins the Terrible Timing Award this week as he was arrested for aggravated assault of a female. Now, the Cardinals have already deactivated him for this week.
I saw where evidently this happened maybe in June or July. I'm not exactly sure. I also don't know why that's coming out right now. So maybe it's not as terrible timing as if there's any ever a good time for that. I think I just saw a tweet where he headbutted his wife and broke her nose, which that's really bad. I mean, it's just hard to believe that anything can drive you to do that. This hurts the Arizona Cardinals on the field. He's not a starter, but he was their backup running back, and Andre Ellington is having issues right now with his foot, and so they don't want him getting that many carries. So Taylor, the kid from Stanford, is going to have to step up. Speaking of stepping up, I mentioned it earlier. You're going to want to hear the conversation I had with Mike Pettine this morning. Of course, I mentioned the podcast Power Rankings. I know how important that is to him, but especially the end of it, the whole thing, he's really honest about his team, about game planning, about Kyle Shanahan. He might be the most honest coach that's out there right now, which I really like. And what he said at the end about getting his first win as an NFL head coach, it's pretty awesome. This was earlier today on SiriusXM NFL Radio with myself and Booger McFarland. Take a listen. Coach, it's Ross Tucker, Booger McFarland, as usual. Good to talk with you. Congratulations on your first official victory as an NFL head coach.
Thank you. It was a blur, but it was a typical NFL roller coaster ride, and we were fortunate to make one more play at the end and come out on top.
Coach, talk about your defense's performance. Obviously, you're going against one of the more high-powered offenses in the league. Just what were you able to do against Drew Brees, Jimmy Graham, and that entire crew?
Well, I think the plan early was solid. We were different in some of the things that we were doing, personnel groupings and some of the coverages we were playing, and I think we confused them. And the crowd was great early. We got them into some third down situations, and we had them backed up. And it was just really tough for them to function. And we were fortunate to kind of slow them down for a while. And to their credit, as they do very often, they got some things figured out and, you know, started to find the right matchups. Jimmy Graham being the one guy that they found a bunch of times. And even when he was covered, he's still open. So it was, that was tough to see some of those plays, but I think overall our guys competed, they executed a plan, and they made plays. We had that one tough stretch where we gave up three touchdown drives in a row, and instead of folding up, then we went ahead and found a way to get a stop, get them out of field goal range, and our offense was able to finish it off.
Mike, you mentioned Jimmy Graham. I saw the one play where Joe kind of was all over him and tried to make a play on the ball and just wasn't able to. I mean, what is the answer for a guy like that? Is there any?
Well, the answer, I think, would be to double him and just have a guy at the line and a guy on top. But that's easy to do, but you can only have 11 out there. You don't want to put those other guys in single coverage or be cover zero for a good portion of the game at other positions, or just be with two high safeties, and then all of a sudden you're extremely light against the run. So I think you need to mix it up, but that's the frustrating thing about a guy like him or a guy like Gronkowski, that their quarterbacks are so accurate that even when they're covered, they're open if they put the ball in the right spot.
Coach, talk about your cornerback position a little bit. I know Joe Hayden, that there was a little scrutiny from some people around the league. How has he played so far this year, and are you happy with the play of your two starting corners?
We know there's room for improvement, but those guys come to work every day, and they put the time in the meeting room, on the practice field, and it'll pay dividends. Everybody just looks at the two plays that Joe gave up to Jimmy Graham, but outside of that, he actually played really well. It's just the two plays where he was in good coverage and just couldn't make a play against an elite receiver. So I don't want to have that overreaction. Hey, he got beat twice. When you look at the game in its entirety and what he was able to do, it was a solid performance for him. But I mean, he needs to make those plays, especially when it's crunch time. And we were real pleased with Justin Gilbert being able to bounce back. Did not have a great opening day performance against Pittsburgh, and came back and was up to the challenge. He went out there and competed, and had fun. It was good to see him take some strides, and then Buster Screen. Very pleased with him, that he's a guy that kind of flies under the radar with those between Joe and Justin, and he's just been real solid for us.
We're talking with Mike Pettine. He's the head coach of the 1-1 Cleveland Browns after their big home opener victory over the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. Mike, I watched a good portion of the game, and two guys that jumped out to me for you defensively were Paul Kruger, who looks like a different guy this year, and Carlos Dansby. I mean, I was skeptical when you guys signed him, just because it feels like Carlos has been around forever, and you wonder how long a guy in his 30s can continue to perform at that high of a level. When you evaluated Carlos and when you evaluate anybody that's his age, how do you determine how much more the guy has left? And has he met your expectations so far? He was flying around everywhere. It was awesome to watch.
Yeah, he's an ultimate pro as far as how he prepares himself. He was a guy we kind of got a year in advance head start with the with his evaluation, because when I was in Buffalo, we brought him in for a visit and had evaluated him then. And kind of asked him the question then, like, how'd you find the fountain of youth? Like, he was down in Miami and you just thought he was a guy that was around forever, and, you know, went and had an unbelievable year at Arizona. And it was a no-brainer for us, to try to get him signed back when free agency started. He knows how to take care of his body, that he's understand. He's very conscious of, and don't get him talking about it, cause it'll be about a 4-hour conversation, but he, it's all with his diet and his workout, and his approach to the game is just amazing. And it's not a shock that he's been able to basically, you know, resurrect his career just because of what he does off the field. And then going back to Kruger, he's a guy that's, you know, I overuse the phrase, but he's fully bought in. When we first got here, that, you know, we had some issues with his, how he was playing the run and aiming points, and, you know, he was running up the field, and it was, you know, we have a saying in the defensive room, you can't get a sack on a running play, so we tightened down his aiming points, and he became much better in his defense of the run. And then just with those edge rushers, we like to turn them loose a little bit, and give them a little bit of freedom, you know, allow the inside guys sometimes to make them right, that we don't always have to say, hey, that we have to contain the quarterback, that we do have some freedom to take an inside entry if we get overset. And he just has a great feel for rushing the passer, that if a tackle oversets him, he knows that he can come underneath, or if a guy sets him short, that he's excellent with his hands, very violent. And it's been good to see that he gave us the buy-in, and we're getting results on the field.
Coach, it's so different to hear you say you can't get a sack on a running play, because, you know me, as a defensive tackle, we play pass every play, and if they ran, oh, we just reacted. So, man, I'm over here like, no, Coach, I don't know if I could play for you, man.
Well, we're big on we gather pre-snap information. So we liken it to a poker game, that if somebody's giving us a tell, run or pass, that if I can hedge my bet a little bit, if I got a good feeling it's pass, we're going to play pass. Mm-hmm. We don't want to ever want our guys just to kind of line up and say, hey, whatever happens, happens. If all indicators are telling me run, then I'm going to anchor in and play run. If it's the opposite, then I can go ahead and roll off.
Talking with Mike Pettine, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Mike, you guys have scored way more points offensively than I thought you would the first 2 weeks, especially on Sunday. You don't have Jordan Cameron, no Ben Tate, no Josh Gordon. You still find a way to put up 26 points and get the win. That's back-to-back pretty solid performances from the offense. Let's start with Kyle Shanahan. What was your track record with Kyle or background before you hired him, and how impressed have you been with the offense he's been able to generate, missing all those guys?
Yeah, I didn't know Kyle. We had never worked together. Had some mutual friends in the league and he came highly recommended. I just had respect from afar for the system. I always thought going against that system that it gave you trouble. Just from a defensive standpoint, just the shifts and the motions and the condensed formations and the play action that married up to the run, those were all things that I just kind of tucked it away and said, hey, listen, if I'm ever in a position to be in charge of an offensive system, I'd like it to be like this. I feel it's very quarterback friendly, and he's done just an outstanding job game planning the first 2 weeks we lost those guys, and I think there's some staffs at times you got built-in excuses, or you just lament the fact that of who you don't have. And I've always been a believer in you can't win with guys you don't have, and it's on us as coaches to put together a plan that maximizes our chances to win with the guys we have available. And I think Kyle, in that sense, is outstanding.
Coach, as you get ready to move forward this week, talk a bit about you know, your matchup, the Baltimore Ravens, how that's going to go. What are we looking for from the Ravens? What have you seen on film from them?
Well, I think this will be an old school AFC North matchup. I think they want to run the ball. I think the 60-some pass attempts in week one, I don't think that's who they want to be. I think you saw much more of it on the Thursday night game against Pittsburgh. I think this is a real good offensive line. I think their backs are very underrated. And I mean they have some obviously have some weapons on offense. I think the addition of Steve Smith was big for them. Provides such a spark, such energy for them on offense. And then you have, you know, Flacco who looks to be playing much better. Obviously can make all the throws, and he's doing a good job this year getting the ball out and getting it distributed. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean they are they're very deep. And they're just fundamentally sound. It's very hard to hit a big play against them. They're going to make you earn it, drive the length of the field. And I think the strength of that group is they got four outside backers that can set edges and rush the passer. Very, very familiar with Suggs, having been there when we drafted him and coaching him. But then you throw in a McPhee and an Upshaw and a Doomerville, and they can just roll those guys in and keep them fresh. I mean, that can cause some problems.
Mike, how much do you talk to Kyle Shanahan this week when you're going against the Gary Kubiak offense? Obviously, those two know each other so well. They've worked together for so long. The offenses are kind of mirror images of each other. Do you try to get as many tips as you can from Kyle, or do you feel like sometimes that part of it's a little overrated? You don't want to go away or deviate from what you normally do prepping for an opponent?
Yeah, we find a happy medium because I don't want to disrupt his preparation either, that he has his hands full with his normal game week prep. We've spent a little bit of time, but when we went against this offense all training camp, and when we truly looked at it, the run game is very similar, a lot of the inside-outside zone with some complementary schemes off of it. But the pass game, other than the play action, just more the drop-back stuff, it's different. The concepts are different and the formations and the distribution, things like that. So we don't get too wrapped up into it. I've been in situations where you can literally just have a guy that was on that staff and he has the playbook, but it truly doesn't help. I think that's a little bit overrated. They're playing at a high level. You saw that last Thursday night. Now you add to it as well that they got a couple extra days to rest.
Were you happy, Coach, with what you got out of Manziel when he came in the game? Should we expect to see more of that? And where are you right now with the quarterback position?
Well, we're very pleased with Brian for him to be able to start a drive at the end on the 5-yard line and drive us, you know, 80 plus yards to kick the game winning field goal and make some clutch throws. That there were a handful of plays that if any one of them had gone the other way, that we end up on the short end. So he's only getting better. People forget. I mean, that was just his second game coming off of the knee, and then the few plays that Johnny was in there, he did his job, and that's something that'll be on the table each week to discuss, and just kind of weigh in the cost benefit of hey, are we forcing another team to prepare for zone read? Which, having been on the other side, that if you don't prepare for it and you don't handle it well, that you can give up some chunk plays. And at the same time, we don't want to disrupt our own chemistry, our own continuity. So it's something that we'll discuss each week. But it's we want to see Johnny develop, that he can only get so many reps in practice. And if we can kind of balance it and get the best of both worlds, then you might continue to see us using them in small doses.
Coach, I know you listen to the Ross Tucker podcast, but you guys move it up again. You're 23rd now in the power ring. So you're moving up. You got to tell me, though, did you get a game ball from the guys after the game? Were they smart enough to realize that you should get a game ball? And what's that moment like? I know a lot of people don't know your backstory of being a high school coach and kind of risking that to take a video gig with the Ravens? I mean,
Yes.
What was that moment like after the game when you are an NFL head coach that got a huge win and, like I said, hopefully they gave you a game ball? I mean, you've been working a long, long time, Mike, to get to that moment.
I did get a game ball. It was as Hoyer presented to me in the locker room afterwards, and it didn't really hit me until I got into the tunnel, and my two oldest kids were waiting for me there, and ran over, and it, you know, I held it together as best I could. The guys were giving me a hard time, but it was emotional, but to me it was important, not from a personal level, but just from a representative of everything that we're trying to get done here, and I just think it validated the implementation of the system that we're both sides of the ball and special teams that we're trying to put in. So I also made sure that the entire coaching staff is getting a painted game ball as well, just to, you know, as a thank you and just something to always look back at. That first win for all of us is always special.
Awesome, Coach. Thanks so much. Good luck on Sunday against Baltimore.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
I told you that would be pretty special. Anytime there's like a special personal moment in an interview that humanizes these guys a little bit, I think it's something that I want you guys to be able to listen to and enjoy. I know a lot of you aren't able to necessarily listen to SiriusXM NFL radio when I'm on over there. You know what? That doesn't bother me. Just listen to this. This is where you get all that information in much quicker time. You know that feeling you get, by the way, when you get things done with just the click of your mouse? It doesn't get any more convenient than that. Well, you can do that with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com. Stamps.com literally or figuratively, I don't know. But either way, it turns your PC or Mac into your own personal post office that never closes. Literally. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your computer and printer and never have to go to the post office again. My special offer is pretty awesome because it's a no-risk trial. All you need to do is sign up and put in the code Ross at stamps.com. Plus, if you want, you get a $110 bonus offer, which includes a digital scale, calculates exact postage for letters and packages, and up to $55 free postage. So here's the deal. It is a no-risk trial. So try it. Go to the trial. Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Ross. Stamps.com. Enter Ross. And, of course, the link to that and the code are always at rostucker.com.
Tux Takes.
Well, Ross, we've got some of the guys who are positively affected about the new PED policy back this week. How much of an impact will Wes Welker, Orlando Scandrick, and Stedman Bailey have this week for their teams?
I think they'll all have some impact. I don't know how great, because I don't know what kind of shape they're in or how much their team was counting on them in the game plan, but Welker, obviously, very familiar with that offense, very familiar with Peyton Manning. And I think that they believe that they really need him for this Seahawks game to control the slot in the middle of the field, allow them to move Sanders back outside. Orlando Scandrick, I think if you just looked at who was the best players on the Cowboys defense coming into this season based on what they did in 2013, I think you have to put Orlando Scandrick at the top of that list. So that's a big boost for a defense that has been surprisingly decent, surprisingly better than we all thought. In terms of Stedman Bailey, there are people that thought he might beat out Tavon Austin for the slot job. That's West Virginia on West Virginia crime right there, but it looks like it might be a reality. We'll see if Stedman Bailey can do that right away.
Tux Takes.
All right, how about this one? Texans head coach Bill O'Brien said the team might use J.J. Watt at tight end even more.
Well, I mean, as if this guy couldn't already be the greatest human being in the history of this fine country, as if he wasn't already Captain America. Now they're going to put him on offense more. He's going to play both ways. Going to score more touchdowns. This guy is I'm obviously being facetious, but I he's a true American hero right now. The way he conducts himself, the way he performs, the way he does everything, to think that he had to walk on at Wisconsin, left Central Michigan, bet on himself is just insane.
Tux Takes.
And finally, last but not least, we've got a game tonight. I know you talked a little bit about it with Greg, but who you got and why?
Well, we talked about it on the Even Money podcast. I've been 0 for 2 on the Bucks, and I've been extremely disappointed by them. And so the smart move would be to say, hey, they just don't have it. I'm tripling down on the Bucks, though. I'm tripling down. There are reports out there that Doug Martin might not play. Rick Stroud told me, who covers the team, that Bobby Rainey would start anyway. Gerald McCoy might not play. It's in Atlanta. It's a night game. I'm still going with the Bucks. I'm still taking the Bucks to finally break through. I think that this Jeff Tedford not calling the plays thing has been a problem. I don't know that this guy that's calling the plays, I think it's Arroyo or something. I'm not sure he knows what he's doing. And McCown has turned the ball over. Maybe that's part of the reason why. I don't know. I'm tripling down on the Bucks. If they lose this one, then I'm probably not going to pick them to win another game the entire year. So congratulations, Bucks. Let's call it 23-20. The Bucks win. I think they run the ball with Bobby Rainey on that Falcons defensive line. McCown doesn't have a costly red zone interception tonight. That'll do it for a Teaching Tutorial Thursday edition of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Send in some emails. We'll get to them eventually, I promise. Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL or the official podcast Twitter handle at RTF Podcast. Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. You can also always hit me up at RossTucker.com. That's where all the pods are. You can sign up for the newsletter there. I got a doozy coming out, as I told you earlier. If you download this on multiple devices, you are doing more than your part. You're just below J.J. Watt on the True American Hero scale if you download this on multiple devices. Amazon, if you got to buy something, it's a little something-something. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, presented by State Farm.
You know, we love hearing from you, so keep on sending those tweets and comments, because we read every one of them. Your opinion is important. That's why we don't want you to miss the chance to take our listener survey at podcast1.com. You see, your responses will help us make this show the very best it can be. It's not a lot of effort, because it'll only take you about 3 minutes, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing that you helped us get better. So do it now. Take the survey at podcast1.com. That's podcast1.com. And don't forget, keep those tweets and comments coming.